Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In chapter 6 of his work, Language, Truth, and Logic, A.J. Ayer is going to assert that moral disagreement, in the sense that we typically think about it, which includes attempts to convince other people that our position is right on moral issues or ethical issues and that their position is wrong, is actually impossible. It can't work the way that we think that it does. Now, his basis for saying this is, in fact, the emotivist theory of ethics, which he articulates throughout that chapter, and which is perfectly consistent and compatible with the logical positivist project that he's got going in the work. So we should think about what does the emotivist theory or perspective on ethics say? It says that when we're using ethical terms and asserting what we take to be ethical or moral propositions, we're not actually making assertions in the way that we would about tangible physical objects that we can easily agree upon or disagree upon. There's issues of value involved, and the value part isn't really a matter of fact at all. It's not something that we can come to some sort of reasoned agreement about, because all we're really doing is expressing what he calls at one point moral sentiment. A little bit later, he will talk about expressing emotions. And those emotions are things like, I'm saying stealing is wrong, amounting basically to saying stealing, oh, no like that. And it doesn't have to be even assertions that one has emotions, it's just expressing emotions. So what this means is that in what we take to be moral disagreements, like you shouldn't steal from your employer, even if your employer is being mean to you, right? There's a nice ethical proposition. Neither side is really asserting any genuine proposition. And we have to be careful, because he does say there may be some things that are genuine propositions. You could say your employer is, in fact, treating you badly. It's possible for you to take money out of the till or, you know, transfer accounts or things like that. Those are genuine propositions because those are empirical. Although treating you badly, now that we think about it, analyzing that, that's a moral proposition as well, but on its surface, it looks as if it's a factual proposition, right? We could define treating badly in terms of some sociological or psychological facts, though. So neither side is actually asserting genuine propositions. Instead, the ethical terms in the arguments or positions are, in fact, expressing our feelings, positive or negative. Or they're doing one other thing. They're trying to get others to feel the same sort of thing. So that's the theory that he's working with. What is the upshot? Well, then it becomes impossible to dispute, as he says, about questions of value. Like, is it okay to repay evil with evil, right? The more general idea behind the, well, my employer is treating me badly, so I should steal a little bit on the side to remedy it in some way. Those would not be things you can actually dispute about. Why? Well, as Ayer says, disputes are going to be about matters of fact. Things that we can agree upon. Now, these could be matters of fact in the sense of the chalk is white, or I have one piece of chalk in my hand, things that we can verify with our senses. They might also be what we could call psychological or sociological facts, where we say, well, in this society, what is considered fair play or justice is this, right? Now, that's not saying that justice really is that. It's just saying these people think of things in this way. So disputes are always about those sorts of matters, and we can dispute about them back and forth and back and forth. What we try to do is get the other person, he says, to agree about empirical facts. And he's got some nice examples in here. He says that, well, if we say that, you know, thrift is a virtue and somebody else says thrift is a vice, what are we going to do? Well, we'll talk about the nature of what we mean by thrift and what a virtue would be and why it would be, you know, considered to be a good thing overall to be thrifty. And we could go on and on. But it's always going to be factual stuff with the value stuff sort of being presupposed or driving the inquiry. He's got a nice example here. It says, when someone disagrees with us about the moral value of a certain action or type of action, we do admittedly resort to argument and try to win them over to our way of thinking. But we do not attempt to show by our arguments he has the wrong ethical feeling. That would be the value part, towards a situation whose nature he has correctly apprehended. What we attempt to show is he's mistaken about the facts of the case. So here's the examples. We argue he has misconceived the agent's motive, or that he's misjudged the effects of the action, or its probable effects in view of the agent's knowledge, or he's failed to take into account the special circumstances in which the agent was placed. Or we employ more general arguments about the effects which actions of a certain type tend to produce, or the qualities which are usually manifested in their performance. Why do we do this? Why do we go through all this back and forth about that? He says, our hope is that we have only to get our opponent to agree with us about the nature of the empirical facts for him to adopt the same moral attitude towards them as we do. So if we see somebody behaving in a way that we think is bad and somebody else thinks it's good, we try to explain to them why, you know, where the badness lies, right? Well, it's in their motive. They have this particular motive. Let's take a great example. Somebody gives a lot of money to charity, but we know that they're doing it for nefarious purposes to try to gather, you know, prestige to themselves so that they can thereby gain a foothold in the political establishment and eventually produce tyranny, which we think is a bad thing, right? We assume that the other person thinks tyranny is a bad thing, and we say to them, can't you see what this person is actually doing? You know, and we get all worked up about it usually because our emotions are getting involved, and they say, I see what they're doing, but I don't see it the same way that you do. I don't see this as like this slippery slope down to tyranny the way that you assume it is. I mean, think about all the major controversial hot button issues that we have going on in our society that people get very worked up about. And you might, you know, think that there's something to what Eric's talking about. So the hope is that the other person, if they can just get the facts right, will actually share our moral attitudes. What often is the case? We actually get agreement about many of the facts of the case, and it turns out that we don't actually agree. We still hold opposite positions. And in that case, what Eyre says is going on is that we have differences in what he calls moral education, or, and he puts it in quotes, conditioning. That is, people have been raised in different ways with different sets of values. And so, for example, some people think it's very important to, you know, work all the time and make as much of yourself as you can and not let any time go to waste so that you can be productive. And other people have the attitude that, well, that makes you a stupid sucker, you know. You should actually take it easy as much as you can and skim as much as possible out of the system. And Eyre would say, well, you know, different people grow up in different households and different societies, and thereby they have these different attitudes. And there's really nothing you can do to convince a person that the basic moral attitudes or presupposed values that they have are the wrong ones, because they're not the wrong ones. There aren't any right or wrong when it comes to values. They simply are what we have. Now, of course, what do? He says, we typically will say that the other person has distorted or underdeveloped moral sense or sensibilities or values. They're one of those people over there who lack values, we often say. When we say somebody lacks values, they don't actually lack values. They lack the values that we would like them to have, according to Eyre, right? So that's as far as we can really get is the bedrock of values. And Eyre goes on to say, listen, without agreement on these basic moral values, you really can't have argument that both sides are going to understand and agree with in order to resolve moral disagreements. He says, we find argument is possible on moral questions only if some system of values is presupposed. If our opponent concurs with us in expressing moral disapproval of all actions of a given type T, then we can get him to condemn a particular action A by bringing forward arguments to show that A is of type T. For the question of whether A does or does not belong to that type, that's a plain question of fact, he says. But given that a man has certain moral principles, we argue that he must, in order to be consistent, react morally to certain things in a certain way. What we do not and cannot argue about is the validity of these moral principles. We merely praise or condemn them in the light of our own feelings. So he says, if you doubt this, try to construct an imaginary argument on a question of value that does not reduce itself to an argument of a question of logic or an empirical matter of fact, and you won't be able to come up with a single example. Now, what he means is one that's actually resolvable. It turns out that there's all sorts of disagreements that we have that if error is right, we cannot resolve. We cannot deal with other than in an emotivist way by expressing our own feelings and trying through that expression to convince the other person that they ought to feel the same way as we do. And if they feel the same way, then they'll accept our thinking on it. Otherwise, we can present our thinking and they can even accept our thinking and say we're still wrong and they disagree. So according to Ayer, the process of dealing with moral disagreements is only partly rational. The side of it that's actually rational is the marshaling of facts and evidence for our side. But driving the entire process is this entire realm of presupposed values, what he calls systems of values, that we've arrived at in non-rational ways. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.